Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Sorry, that was my fault. I was distracted.
How many times has this happened now?
How much time do you got? I was very distracted. Once you know what I was distracted with, you would understand why I wasn't paying attention to start the music.
Well, it was the newscast that I'm sure you were paying attention to.
No, definitely wasn't that. I was learning more about the rut.
I figured you were investigating this.
I'm fascinated by this now. You mentioned that the deer are in mating season.
Yes, they are.
Which is called the rut.
The rut.
Also known as mammalian reproduction. The rut, this could be a far-flung forecast. The rut comes from the Latin word regat, which means to roar.
To roar?
To roar.
I've never heard a deer roar.
It's the mating season. It's just, you know, from the Latin word, like, hey, baby. Hey.
Come here often.
You deer, what's your sign?
What are you doing tonight?
Hey.
Don't get caught in the headlights.
So it's not only the mating. Sometimes, you know, I come in here like with a game plan for the show and something happens like this.
And you get just thrown off base.
It's like when you jingle keys in front of a cat. And I get completely distracted. The rut. The rut not only happens to deer, it happens to sheep, camels, bison, giraffes, and antelopes.
Now, why are the other animals excluded?
And, I don't know. And skunks and elephants.
What about baboons?
I saw a skunk on Foster Avenue the other day.
Was it in a rut?
Yeah, it was in the rut, and it was the old song "Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road."
Oh, that's not came to mind. Shawnee people are eating bugs.
What about baboons? Because we went over to a Lincoln Park Zoo this week.
Yeah,
I tell you, go visit the baboon section right now if you want to feel like a fourth grade immature.
Are they?
they were definitely in a rut over there. I mean,
hey,
a couple zookeepers, they're standing there taking notes or something. And I felt embarrassed being like this fourth grade immature. Hey, there's a rut going on at the Lincoln Park Zoo.
Hey, good looking. I'll be back to pick you up later.
A baboon with a Mr. Microphone.
I was going to say baboons and deers with Mr. Microphone.
During the rut. For deer.
So do you come here often?
It's the only cage we got. During the rut, males rub their antlers or their horns on trees.
On the trees.
On trees or shrubs.
That marks their territory.
And they fight each other, and they wallow in mud to make themselves more attractive to the female deers.
I could see why you are fascinated by this.
This is fascinating, isn't it? That the deers... They're like...
No, deer.
Deer, the deer.
The deer.
The deer.
Singular and plural. Deer.
They say to themselves, you know what? I've been wearing the same coat all season. What am I going to do to set myself
it's
apart
time for
from
a
the
new
crowd?
Winter coat.
I got to... Every other deer, you know, looks... You know, I got to do something to set myself, you know, to make myself a little more sexy. What am I going to do? I'm going to rub mud all over myself. I'm going to wallow in mud and dust.
Mud by Chanel.
And they are, according to my research that I've done for the last 2 minutes, I now consider myself an expert in this, but apparently the deer are quite dangerous during this time.
Well, yes, they can be there are some very sad stories about fatal accidents involving deer at this time of the year.
And the automobiles, because the they're running around like crazy.
Right.
But
you hit one, you are in trouble.
But if you, you know, normally if you come in contact with a deer, and who doesn't on a day-to-day basis? They run away, right?
They will run away.
They look up, they do their neck, you know, the, like their neck, what?
I only know of
there's
one.
There's a human, I'm getting out of here.
I know of one story. I have a friend who has a home in Michigan, and she pulled into her driveway, and there was a great big deer standing there. And he just looked at her.
Did the deer have mud on him?
No, I don't know.
Because you know he was out on the prowl. If he had the mud on him, he's like, hey, good looking.
But he did not move.
I don't know why I'm stuck on the mixer microphone thing. How fantastic would that be, though, if a deer actually held up a Mr. Microphone and started talking about it? That's a TV sitcom.
I'm going to go out in the forest and do this and see what happens now.
So apparently the deer actually can be quite dangerous to human beings and domestic animals, especially dogs. They will attack you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of running away.
Because ordinarily they do run away thinking you're a predator.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they run away, but not when they're in the rut. Not when they're in the rut, they're not. Mm-mm.
I've been in a rut every Sunday morning for the last 10 years.
Tough to get out of those ruts.
Well, you've been dangerous all those years also.
That's why I keep my door closed.
The beginning of this process, velvet falls off their antlers. And this can happen. Wait a second. I need some. Here we go. Yeah. This is better. The rut can start as early as the end of September and last all the way through the winter months. And the velvet, the velvet, falls off their antlers.
Was it blue velvet?
What is that, velvet? That's beautiful.
That's beautiful. I could make a nice purse out of that. This is fascinating. I want to learn more about this.
You want to go out and get a hunting license and find out more about
I don't want to go out and kill anything.
I don't
want
to harm a deer, no.
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, I know people are into hunting. I am not whatsoever. But they're...
You ever gone fishing?
I have.
Okay.
I guess it's the same, but is that the point that you're making? Is why am I against hunting, but I have no problem
fishing? No, I don't hunt. I will fish, but I've never hunted.
What? This? Wow.
Okay.
Wow. I notice here that there are some YouTube videos on understanding the deer during rut. Ooh, I'm going to look at these videos after the show today.
Just
it's a good thing we're off early today. I have plenty of time to look.
I was going
to
say, we've got an...
We're off.
But all we're going to talk about is mating season.
I'm going to look at the deer on company time today. This show has been extremely educational so far, hasn't it?
I've learned a lot.
See what happens when I use a story like this
brag.
In a newscast?
I'm not a bragger, but I'm going to say, this is the most educational show you're going to hear on Sunday morning radio.
That is right. That's why we've won all these awards.
You're not hearing this over on B96 right now. They're not talking about the rut season of the deer. That's us. That's us. WGN.
So how far behind are we on spots now?
No, we're
we're okay. On schedule?
Yeah, okay. No, we're okay.
All right.
Okay, that concludes the science portion of our program for today.
Tell us more, Mr. Science.
What I was going to start the show off with today was my shock when I went to the grocery store yesterday morning, because that's what I do on Saturday morning, go to the grocery store. Do my shopping before anybody's out.
Did you cover up the cart as usual?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course I did. And you know, it's nice now because it's jacket season. So it's not weird that I walk in
with the coat.
It's 90 degrees
rather
outside.
Rather than 95 and humidity to match. And
I've got my coat and I like
a raincoat.
I like to put it over my groceries because it's none of your damn business what I'm buying. I don't want to be judged by my purchases. But the all the Christmas stuff's out. Christmas stuff is out already. The Christmas.
I haven't seen Christmas stuff. I take that back. I have seen the seasonal scented pine cones that are out. I've seen those.
Go to a Target store or stores like that. The Christmas tree displays are up already. The Christmas lights, the Christmas ornaments. It's not even Halloween yet. It's not even close to Halloween yet.
I saw the Halloween stuff out before Labor Day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Halloween stuff's out, as it should be in October. Although I'm wondering who's going to go trick-or-treating this year. How is that even going to work? I'm just curious. Are people going to let their kids go to strangers' houses? Or even, people would go to the houses of friends or neighbors or, people that they know. Is that even going to work?
Yeah, I've seen some areas are permitting trick-or-treating to do it, in the late afternoon, early evening hours, as that's been the case for a long time in areas. But also I've heard reports of the trick-or-treaters have to wear a mask, a medical mask underneath their Halloween mask or costume. Then I've heard things saying that might not be such a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it really inhibit breathing.
Well, it's the issues of safety that we've always been concerned about for Halloween time, but now it's also, is it COVID-19 safe for all of that to be going on?
Right, exactly.
And I don't know. I mean, kids would go to Halloween parties to avoid going to strangers' homes to get candy. Is it safe even to go to parties now? I have no idea. Parents have had a lot to adapt to during this whole COVID-19 time with e-learning and kids being at home. And, now this, I feel bad for the kids.
Sports, extracurricular activities being canceled.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is these are extraordinary times. And then, on top of it, the Christmas stuff's out already. They jumped over Halloween, jumped over Thanksgiving. Do you want to buy a Christmas tree today? I can tell you exactly where to go. Need some ornaments, some Christmas lights? It's already out.
But I've seen that out in September before, So I'm not terribly surprised by this. Yes, it's rushing things, but I've seen the Christmas things out first part of October.
Yeah,
in years past.
I don't think I just haven't noticed. But I was just so surprised because I went to several stores. I needed to get, a bunch of different things. And the Christmas stuff is out and, it's out there and ready to go already.
So what did you buy?
None of your damn business. I believe I made
same
my point
reply
by
for covering, the last 10 years. Yeah, it's none of your business.
Covering my stuff up. Shrani, this deer rut update just texted into us.
Oh, yes. What do we hear?
From the 630 area code. The rut is extremely violent. So if you ever see deers, this says deers, but you're correct. It's deer. If you ever see deer, get the hell out of there.
that's a rather blunt way of putting it.
That's what the text says. So I think this is an award-winning show that we've got here today so far.
Yeah, it's not even 25 minutes old.
Yeah. Too bad we have a short show today.
Yeah, right.
Off it, I think we could hit levels of brilliance that we've never hit before. I feel that brilliance potential today. It's a once-in-a-lifetime feeling.
We won't be in a rut here.
It doesn't happen very often.
But when it does.
But I feel something special going on here today.
It is like a re-energizing phenomenon.
It is. So, we have the far-flung forecast coming up?
Oh, yes. We have a very timely one also.
Okay. We're going to do that in a second here, so don't go too far away.
All right.
I just want to tell everybody what's coming up on the show today. Are you familiar with the name Ray Cortopassi? Ray Cortopassi? You may not be yet, but you will be soon. He's the new evening news anchor on WGN-TV. He starts replacing Joe Donlin, who went to WGN America's News Nation. So Ray Cortopassi was a big-time anchorman in Indianapolis, but he's from the Chicago area. He was born and raised here. And we're going to talk with him. He premieres tomorrow on WGN television. We are going to talk with him here this morning on the radio. We've got our theater segment today. I've got a nice little mini food segment for you today, all the regular Sunday morning things. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, as we do every single Sunday morning, roughly at this time, it's time for your far-flung forecast. A fascinating compendium of information each week presented by the one and only Dave Milford Schwann.
Oh, I thought you were going to call me Rutford or something like that.
That would have been good.
Milford?
Milford.
I like that.
Yeah, Milford.
Milford. Thank you, Uncle Dean. Today, we go way out west to Mariposa, California. Mariposa, California.
Whereabouts is Mariposa, California?
I'm getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
Excuse me for breathing.
Wow.
Mariposa, California. Is a population of 2,173. That is, according to the 2010 census, rather. These numbers will be changing as the 2020 numbers appear. Mariposa was formed right around the time California became a state in 1850. Mm-hmm. And they have one of the oldest continuously operating courthouses really in the country. The Mariposa County Courthouse was built in 1854. It is still in use, and I can tell you from personal experience, it's a very cool building to visit.
Does it look like an old-fashioned?
Yeah,
like
it's old? A frame. It's a two-story frame building with a clock tower and a bell.
That's
and
cool.
The whole bit. Yeah, it's a great, great little courthouse. But we mentioned Mariposa because it is kind of known as the gateway to really one of the most beautiful places, personal opinion, in the world, Yosemite National Park.
Oh, yeah.
And on Thursday's date, October 1st, Yosemite celebrated its 130th anniversary as a national park.
Hmm.
And they're also dealing with a lot of natural problems out there, obviously, with the fires, the Creek Fire specifically, some serious smoke problems around Yosemite and Mariposa. Yosemite is open with some reservations. You have to kind of apply in advance or check in advance before you go to the park. And a couple of main roads are closed in Yosemite now, all because of the smoke and the Creek Fire activity there. But, you know, while this may not be the best time to go to Yosemite, it is one of those things you have to see to believe. It is just that beautiful out there.
Yeah, I drove through a part of it one time, a very short period of time, and it's breathtaking.
Yeah.
It's stunning to see what nature hath provided us.
Right, right. And we're fortunate that this has been preserved thanks to really pioneers like Theodore Roosevelt and John Muir were the ones that worked to help save that. And now having been protected for 130 years.
What makes these fires so scary?
What makes them so scary?
That's what, I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot, lot of damage.
Oh, yeah, because there could be damage, permanent damage,
yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
And just a couple years ago when they had the fires out in that same area, the park was closed entirely because of the fire and the damage. There are areas of Yosemite that have been damaged by the fires. So, you know, that let's hope that whatever is happening there now, any damage will be minimal. And the things will be able to come back. But we have partly cloudy skies, 71 in Mariposa, California.
I just love hearing Orion Samuelson saying the words Busta Rhymes. Congratulations to Orion. 9:36, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Time for our weekly visit with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Kevin, good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning, Dean.
Good to have you with us. And COVID-19, you know, once again taking the top place in all of the headlines with the announcement of the President and Mrs. Trump testing positive. As a matter of fact, five other people who were at that Rose Garden ceremony announcing the Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett also testing positive. I'm guessing that you've been following it. I'm guessing you've been listening to what the doctors have been saying. What's your take on what's going on with everything so far?
Yeah, I've definitely been following it closely, obviously, because everyone wants to know. And I find it very interesting. I think you're going to probably see more people test positive from that Rose Garden event. If you look at where people were seated and then afterwards how close they were all talking, someone obviously there was infected and certainly passed it on. You know, as far as what we're hearing from the doctor for the president, yeah, he's kind of between a rock and a hard place, and I kind of feel a little bit sorry for him. Certainly there's, you know, the patient's privacy issues. I am sure he was told this is what you can say and this is what you can't say. And we have to balance the patient privacy issues and balance that with the public's right to know about the health of their leader. And it's a very difficult situation. But I'm a little bit more concerned than I would say the rosy picture that's been brought out.
Chief of Staff Mark Meadows was interviewed on Fox News and said that the president had a fever on Friday and that his oxygen level had dropped rapidly. He also added that the president has made, quote, unbelievable improvements from yesterday. Is that consistent with what happens when somebody tests positive? What normally happens to a person when they test positive? What are the kinds of symptoms that we see?
Yeah, so sometimes when they test positive, they obviously are on no medication and nothing is being done for them. And then when we start to do things like treat their fever, give them some supplemental oxygen, do some treatments for them to make their breathing a little bit easier, certainly they're going to get better. We know with this illness, though, the scary thing is that some individuals get better and then crash rapidly. So as this virus is replicating in your body, certainly we can eliminate some of those early symptoms. But if we haven't slowed down the replication of the virus, or if your immune system is not strong enough, then certainly we're going to see this big rebound as we start to see the virus take over more. For him, it'll be interesting, Dean, because, you know, he's getting the kitchen sink thrown at him, you know, more than any other patient probably in the world. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I mean, in terms of the treatments that he's getting right now, he's getting treatments that the average person would not get who tested positive.
Correct. You know, so remdesivir, you know, we've talked about that a lot of times. That's a drug that's still in clinical trials, but has been given emergency authorization, use authorization, EUA. So he has gotten that, which would be an appropriate drug for him to get if he were even John Q. Public. The other one, the Regeneron, is the one that's kind of interesting. That one is still in trials, small.
That's the antibody therapy that he's getting, right?
Correct. The one that they're calling the polyclonal cocktail that they're throwing at him.
Okay.
You know, that's made by Regeneron. It's in a very small study right now, 275 people. So for him to get that, they had to go to the FDA and get something called compassionate use because it had not been approved yet for the general public use.
So the president released a video on Twitter talking about how he's doing and, very positive. I'm doing great. I feel like I could walk out of here. I don't know. Did you see that video, Kev?
Yep, I did.
So what's the, nothing political related to that, but, I mean, you know, when someone is checked into the hospital, is that how they normally look? Is that how, you know, the demeanor of the person normally is? I'm just curious of how this compares to any other person who has checked into the hospital for COVID-19.
Yeah, you know, he looked a little tired, certainly, but he, you know, one of the things we look at signs and symptoms is one of them is called conversational dyspnea. In other words, can he talk with a complete sentence without taking a breath or without slowing down to breathe? And he, that video was like 5 minutes long. He did not appear to have that at all. You know, that's one of the ones where we start to say people get short of breath to a point where they can't complete a sentence. He didn't have that at all. So that's kind of reassuring from just watching the video. He had a fever. So we say, okay, they say now he hasn't had a fever, but it would be nice to know he hasn't had a fever and we haven't had to give him Tylenol or Advil or aspirin to bring that fever down versus he just doesn't have a fever. Yeah. So the signs and symptoms really over these next couple of days are going to be key.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what all the doctors are saying right now, that the next few days and the next week will, really tell the story on this. What do you expect will be happening in the treatment of the president?
Yeah, he'll continue to get the remdesivir, obviously, and then really that's going to be the borderline step right there. I'm sure that they've probably given him steroids as well to try to decrease any inflammation or chance of inflammation in his lungs. But besides that, as far as treatments, that's probably about it right now. And now they're really just going to be keeping an eye on him, trying to get his nutritional status up. You don't know what his vitamin status is. He's been known to not be the healthiest eater. So they've probably given him some vitamin cocktails as well. And that'll probably be the extent right now, is they just monitor him very closely for his oxygenation, his respiratory rate, and his white blood cell count.
They're saying that the First Lady is doing well. Is the president's gender have something to do with this, his age, and the fact that he is overweight?
100%. The First Lady, if I'm not mistaken, is 50 years old and looks to be in fairly good health. So if you look at the president, risk factors, certainly 74, definitely a risk factor. Obesity, one of the risk factors that we have noticed routinely throughout this illness, is that obesity is a very high risk factor for him. And he's male. So we have those three. We don't know about heart disease, but it would not surprise me that he has high blood pressure, just from looking at his body habitus and knowing his exercise routine. So if that's true, he would have three or four strikes going against him right now.
So, among those who have also tested positive are the former advisor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, Republican Senators Mike Lee of Utah and Tom Tillis of North Carolina, also Notre Dame president, Reverend John Jenkins, all of these people who were at the Rose Garden ceremony for Amy Coney Barrett, who apparently had tested positive much earlier in the pandemic. And, would that make her not at risk among all of these spreaders who were in one place and shaking hands with her and, talking to her without masks?
Well, we certainly hope so, right? But we know now that there have been a few cases of someone who had the disease, got over the disease, and got the disease again. So we don't know enough as far as how long your immune system will keep you immune to the illness. And if I'm not mistaken, she had it early in the summer. So you would think, boy, I would hope that she still has some immunity after this period of time. The other individuals, obviously somebody, when you get that many positives in that short of a period of time, it had to happen at that event.
Yeah.
It would be like winning the lottery if they all happened to get exposed at a different time, especially knowing that at that time they weren't wearing masks, they weren't really dressed appropriately.
Yeah, and what a lot of people are saying that they are most concerned with former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was also at that event, also tested positive. He drove himself to the hospital as a precautionary measure. He's got all kinds of risk factors, being overweight, his age, other medical conditions, including asthma, which I would think has to be difficult with something that is such a respiratory disease, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Chris Christie, who obviously should be probably even more concerned than we are with the president. The other thing we didn't talk about, Dean, is the impact of stress on your immune system. And at this time, all of those individuals that we just discussed are certainly under a lot of stress, not probably getting the amount of sleep that they need, not eating properly. And really, that impacts your immune system. And right now, you want your immune system to be as high as possible and as tuned up as possible, because you need to start making antibodies to fight this off. Those are the individuals who are surviving this and are doing well.
So You know, the other part of this story, I mean, everybody, you know, hopes for the president's recovery. All of the people who have tested positive, you know, we're hoping that they get through this and, you know, are healthy again. We can get back to life as normal. But bottom line of this whole thing is, I don't think there's been a single week that we've been talking about this, Kevin, since the beginning of the pandemic, where we didn't talk about wearing masks, social distancing, all the things that did not happen at this event in which so many people were apparently infected.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that we needed to take this step to show that what we've been saying is actually exactly what science has been proving. So it's been very unfortunate, the impact that this might make on not only the government, but on all these individuals. If we would just have listened to the scientists, we wouldn't be in this position that we're in right now, which I just find, you know, so disappointing. You know, certainly all those individuals were tested before they went in, which just shows us that even, you know, Vice President Pence, his single negative test should not be a reassurance that he does not have this disease and it is starting to smolder inside him. You know, for him to say, I'm going out back out into the public, boy, I certainly wouldn't want to be at one of those rallies right now, knowing that he was very potentially in very close proximity to many individuals who have now tested positive.
Well, you mean I guess for lack of a better word, the incubation period of testing positive can be different with different people depending on your metabolism?
Absolutely, and depending on how much virus you have in your body at the time. And so if you think about it, let's just, these are just numbers just for illustration. Let's say I have one virus in the back of my throat, but I know that the test needs to have 20 before it can be positive. So I get tested, I have one, it's negative. I get to 10, I get to 15, I get to 20. Now I would be positive. That might take 2 to 3 days. So just because you've been initially infected doesn't mean that you're going to test positive immediately. It may take a couple of days of incubation before. So that's why I think you're going to start to see more people test positive that were at that Rose Garden event, especially those who, if you saw, not so much when they were sitting there, because you're only concerned then about the people right around you, but the interactions of people afterwards where they were shaking hands, giving hugs, talking very close face to face.
Yeah. I'm going to take a break and we'll come back with your questions for Dr. Kevin Most. But just to address one of the questions that has been texted in, 847 area code saying, are you talking about this to shame Trump? And let me just address this right now. We're not talking about this to shame anybody. We're not talking about this to say, I told you so to anybody. We talk about this every Sunday morning to protect you, to give you information so you can protect yourself. This is about arming you with the information you need so you don't test positive. That's all this is about. If you want to put some political motive in it, I can't control what people are going to think, but that's the intention of this that we do every weekend in talking about this, so we all understand better, so we don't wind up in the hospital and on a ventilator. 9:53, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, 7:20, WGN with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital, answering your questions on all things COVID-19. A texter, Dr. Most, is saying, why wasn't the president hooked up to IVs? I've heard people say that. They were surprised to see him in street clothes and, you know, not looking like a hospital patient.
Yeah, I'm sure that was, you know, by his choice. Now, he probably had what we call a HEPLOCK, which the IV was started and then just capped while he made his video. He obviously was on an IV at one time for the remdesivir to give the medication. But besides that, the only thing you really need the IV for is emergent use of any urgent medications or for his hydration status. Obviously, he's eating and drinking fine. So really, it's just going to be for the delivery of the medication. And the remdesivir is given for 5 days in a row. So he got his dose really doesn't need the IV anymore, so it was probably capped. It was probably still in him, but it was probably capped. And then he'll be receiving that again. But really, no other reason, unless he's going to be getting other medications on a continuous basis, to use the IV.
Here's Bill at 312-981-7200. Good morning. You're on WGN.
Thank you, Dean. Dr. Most, I want to thank you for doing these Sunday morning spots. I really appreciate all the information you give us. We've been told, and a lot of people have been saying, you know, I'm going to go with the science. I'm trusting that, what the CDC and the WHO was saying in that. About a week and a half ago, I believe it was the CDC, and I think it was even Dr. Fauci, said that now we are possibly expecting a vaccine possibly next month or December. And also the CDC coming out with the statement of that the virus actually being spread out of doors wasn't really so much an issue now. They said that that's what they meant to put, you know, on their website initially, but they said it was entered wrong, and that they said with social distancing that masks would not need to be worn at all outside.
Let me jump in for just a quick second here, Bill, and because so we don't run out of time. Dr. Most, just the update on vaccines. Is it possible there could be something within the next few weeks, as Bill has said?
Yeah, I think you'll start to see some good results on the large studies on the vaccine. I think the big one, obviously, the AstraZeneca, you know, had been held off for a little bit. Moderna's still going. The Johnson & Johnson one, I think, is the one we're all looking forward to the results of that, because it's a single vaccine. So I think you'll start to see some results, because now these studies have been going on for over a month now. And Bill, to your other point, the aerosolized versus droplet, I know that's the one that's very confusing for all of us, especially in the medical population. We expect to understand that from the CDC and World Health Organization. What are we telling people? How far will this virus travel after we speak or scream or yell? And that's something that's very important that we need to get straightened out after this snafu with the CDC releasing that that one comment.
Thank you for the call, Bill. This is Ron in Tinley Park. You're on WGN.
Yeah, thank you. A group of us seniors used to get together once a week to play cards, and obviously we haven't done it for a while. Can we now, if we wear masks and gloves, can we safely play cards? And if we do we have to sit 6 feet apart?
Ron, I certainly would stay 6 feet apart, and I certainly would wear masks. You know, the social interaction for people is very important, and we know that, and the stress that it is putting on people. So you really need to make sure that you're as safe as you possibly can be. The wearing of gloves is interesting. You know, the big thing with this is it's not important about the gloves. It's more important about it, whether you're touching your face and how you're doing that. So if you are going to do this, I would say please stay as far apart as you possibly can to still do it. Wash your hands frequently, and everyone should wear masks.
And also,
certainly,
Kevin,
stay those 6 feet.
If this group is playing cards, I mean, they're touching the same cards that each other are touching. And, you know, presumably, you know, you have a card, and, you know, you throw it in, I take the card. You know, I don't want to know what kind of game they're up to with their high-stakes
right.
high-stakes games. But isn't it possible for the virus to be spread by touching these cards, and then you touch your face off of something that you got on the card?
Yeah, potentially. If you're going to be as careful as you possibly can, use a brand new deck of cards. Everybody washes their hands and washes your hands in between games. The chance of spreading it in that is going to be extremely low. So the cards are not infected to begin with. Everyone's hands are clean. And at least, you know, I'm just trying to at least give somebody the safest possibility they can to have a social interaction and not spread the illness. And that would be being as cautious as you possibly can. Because I do think we need to have some social interaction with individuals here. So if you're not going to play cards, get together and just talk. So, but I mean, please think about that.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Ron, and thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And as always, Kevin, we appreciate you joining us today. What might we look forward to now in the next few days? Not look forward to, like we can't wait to see it, but what might we expect to happen with the president the next few days?
Yeah, Dean, I think it's really going to be, you know, tell us how he's progressing and tell us, you know, has he slowed the symptoms and have he at least stabilized? We have to remember, you know, he's 74. Everyone thinks, oh, at day 10, he's going to be running back and doing things. Those day 10, day 14 cases we're talking about are for the asymptomatic individuals. Here's someone who's 74 and has symptoms. I do not expect him at the end of this week to be back. If he is, that would be extremely surprising to me. But it should be right now, are we looking to see, is the illness progressing in him, or has the medications and his own immune system stifled it to a point of minimizing any symptoms he might have?
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Kev, have a great Sunday. Thank you as always.
Dean, take care.
Coming up on the program this morning, we will be talking with Ray Cortopassi. He, tomorrow night, will begin as the new evening news anchor on WGN television. Paired up, of course, with Micah Mater. So we're going to look forward to that. Ray is born and raised here in the Chicago area, although he spent the last several years in Indianapolis as one of their top news anchors. We'll talk with him coming up in about a half an hour. Got our weekly theater segment. I've got, oh man, I think I outdid myself in my weekly cooking segment on TV this week. I don't want to brag, but I'm going to anyway. I made some, you know, in this kind of weather, is there anything more delicious than a lovely beef stew? I don't think so. Is there anything more comforting?
What about, since we've been talking about mating season, some venison stew?
You know, I don't think I've ever eaten venison.
It's, when it's prepared well, it's quite good.
Yeah.
It can be very tender.
Not gamey? I've heard that it's not gamey.
If it's a very good rare cut of meat, no fat, and thin, or rather, you know, prepared well,
yeah,
it's very good.
It's good. Does it taste like beef?
Almost. It's not quite like a fillet would be, a beef fillet, but it's along those lines.
Well, one of these days,
if it's poorly prepared, yeah, it's gonna taste a little gamey.
Have you ever had any, Andy? I don't even. Why am I even asking Andy if he's ever had venison? Andy,
you know what? It was snuck into me one time.
Oh,
snuck.
Well, here's the deal.
Somebody tricked you?
Yeah, I was at my brother's house in Colorado. And it was snowing, and it was, you know, one of those days that, you, like you say, you need a little comfort mood, a little stick to the ribs kind of stuff. Yeah. And he said, I'm going to make you some chili. I'm like, all right, great. Warm it up. And it was venison
chili
and elk.
In the chili?
In the chili, yeah.
Did you like it?
I didn't. Well, he told me after I was done.
Did you like it before you knew that it was venison and
I
elk?
I liked it before I knew it was venison and elk. Okay. Afterwards, I was so-so.
Was there any broccoli and cauliflower mixed in?
There were no carnivorous vegetables.
Andy may be the most picky eater that I've ever
cruciferous,
met.
Cruciferous, not carnivorous.
I just say that to anger some people. I'm getting better.
I'm curious to
getting
try
better.
It. I'm curious to try it. You know. Speaking of these foods, remember the week? What was it, a couple of months ago, something like that. We had Face Your Fear weeks on the show where we wanted to try things we were afraid of. And I'd never tried herring because I thought it looked disgusting. And Shwandi apparently has eaten it all of his life. But for all the rest of us, it was something we've never tried. Somebody sent me a picture of herring on the shelf in a grocery store just to taunt me. People are taunting me with pictures of herring. But anywho, a nice, you would like beef stew, right, Andy? I mean,
oh, yeah, love beef stew.
Yeah, beef stew with like potatoes in it and
carrots
and celery. And well, here's what I did with the beef stew. I'll give the recipe in a few minutes, but I made it. You like French onion soup?
I do.
This is how I was describing it. If French onion soup got married to beef stew, what would it be? So I made the beef stew as if it were French onion soup. It's all the stuff in beef stew, but I also put all the things that you love in French onion soup in it also, topped it with that nice Gruyere cheese that they put on top of the bowl, and, you know, like they melt it on top of there. It was delicious. I got to say, this was like one of the best things I've made on TV. And I did it in a slow cooker, so it's super easy if you're busy. You know, you put it all together, you know, the day before. You can do it the day before, but it needs about between 5 and 8 hours, depending on the heat setting of your slow cooker. But, you know, your house smells like beef stew, and it's like, oh, it's fantastic.
Now, do you brown the meat before you put it into all of this?
I brown the meat before. This is what you do. You dredge the beef in flour first.
Right.
Okay. And,
yeah.
And then you.
My mother used to do it that way.
Then you brown it.
Yeah.
And so you can put that in your slow cooker. I took some sweet Vidalia onions and sliced those up because, you know, this is the French onion part of the thing. I caramelized those first before I put them in the slow cooker. So now it's got this wonderful, sweet, delicious onion, like French onion soup kind of taste. That goes in the slow cooker. In goes a little bit of beef broth. In goes a little red wine into the crock pot. In goes a little red wine into the chef at the same time. the carrots, the potatoes, celery went in there. A bunch of different spices went in there. I think what really sets it apart is a couple of bay leaves that go in the mixture as well. It gives it a really wonderful, wonderful flavor. And then you know, set it and forget it. For 8 hours. I put it on real slow because I like slow cooking. I think that makes things most flavorful. It was so delicious. It was really, really good. Full recipe up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. And this week I'm going to be doing Cuban Sloppy Joes on TV. Cuban Sloppy. You like Sloppy Joes?
Love them.
Of course.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a Sloppy Joe?
Yeah.
This
good
is
a fall dish too.
I know, that's what I'm trying to do right now because it's, you know, a little chilly outside. Cooking every Wednesday about 9:30, 9:35-ish every Wednesday morning on WGN TV.
I take it this was less controversial than the pumpkin macaroni and cheese was on there a few weeks ago,
for which I have now been vindicated. By the way,
that's right.
By the Kraft macaroni and cheese people who just put out
this,
they put out their own version of pumpkin macaroni and cheese. I can't go quite as far as saying that they copied it from me. I have no proof of that, but it is ironic that theirs came out just weeks after. My recipe came out, for which I was lambasted on the show for mixing pumpkin and macaroni and cheese. It was actually delicious. But this was a completely controversy-free recipe. Somebody on the text line is asking, what about the bread in the beef stew onion soup? No, I didn't put any bread in it. I did have some nice crusty bread that I had after it to sop up all the good juices. That was quite delicious. But I didn't put any bread in the actual.
Yeah, you could do the bread itself as a side type of thing with this stew.
Yeah. You know what? Because it was like French onion soup, that's what they're asking about, that there's like usually a chunk of toasted bread that sits on top of the French onion soup. I did that separately. I did do that separately. I had a piece of French bread, put a little olive oil on it, and the Gruyere cheese, which I broiled, so the cheese melted on top of the bread, and then I took a piece of that and put it on top of the beef stew, so it was like French onion soup.
Mm.
Yeah. Somebody texted in, I made your beef stew yesterday. It was amazing. My husband's favorite part was the bread with cheese. Oh, good. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Someone said, have you ever thought about doing that stew in a pressure cooker? I don't have a pressure cooker. I don't have an Instapot.
Oh.
Is it life-changing?
It's life-altering.
That's what everybody says. Yeah. I have to get one.
My girlfriend has two of them. And an air fryer, which you need to get, too.
That's what people are saying, that these are two things. For me right now, I'm sure, you know, everyone raves about them, so I'm sure they're great. Right now, for me, it's just two more things to clutter up my counter space.
Yeah, well, that's the case in our case as well. But, you know, the air fryer, she made chicken parm last night out of the air fryer. So it wasn't, you know, it was a little more healthy.
So it was breaded.
Breaded,
but not fried.
Correct.
In oil. It was air fried, and it was good.
It was really good. Mm. Gluten-free pasta along with it, too.
Very nice.
How about that? I'm moving up in the world.
Look at you. Look at you with what your girlfriend's making you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Andy.
Trying to be a healthier me.
Good. That's good. It's good.
It's a struggle, but
someone
I'm trying.
Someone says, I have a recipe for venison stew that would knock your socks off. Okay. Send it in. Send it in. Maybe I'll cook venison stew on the show one of these days. We'll give it a try.
Just tell me it's beef stew and I'll have it.
Just, that's the key with Andy. Yeah. Does your girlfriend tell you what you're eating before you eat it?
Yeah.
And you go along with it.
Well, I have to, you know, because if she's cooking it, I'm gonna eat
what
it.
Are you
say? She's going through the trouble of making it.
Right.
I'm not gonna.
Or you're saying, I don't want any. I don't like it.
Well, she knows that sometimes it's an effort in frustration if she makes certain things. So she knows we're on the same page.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Look at our little Andy growing up.
I'm all grown up. We have a dog, too, now.
He gets to be a play-by-play man. He gets a dog. He's eating broccoli. Oh.
About time I got my, together. Baby, all
I need, and I wish she is all. Always nice to have you with us here on our Sunday morning show. 10:24. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Got our theater segment coming up. Ray Cortopassi, who is the brand new evening news anchor, co-anchor on WGN-TV alongside Micah Mater. He'll be starting tomorrow night. We're going to talk to him today. That's coming up in just a little while. We've got the debates still to talk about with everything that's going on now with last week's crazy debate that took place. Now, President Trump in the hospital with COVID-19, the future of the presidential debates are something that everybody's wondering about. Is it going to happen? Apparently, the vice presidential debates definitely will be happening between Vice President Pence and Senator Kamala Harris. And everyone's been asking that if the president and Vice President Biden do have another debate, is it going to be similar kind of format to what we had before, where they're both in the same room, where there is the likelihood of kind of a free-for-all that we had before? There are no guarantees that everyone's going to follow the rules that they agree to ahead of time. That's the part that gets me with this, that before these debates happen, there is meticulous negotiating that goes on between the two sides of who's going to stand where and what's going to happen and how long will you have to talk uninterrupted and how long will I have to talk and will I be able to respond? I mean, it's a process that, that they go through. And then comes debate time and everybody just completely forgets. They don't forget. They completely ignore the rules upon which they all agreed. That's the part that gets me with this. And it's been quite the discussion on social media of whether or not there should be another debate, what should happen, how the format ought to go. People have been saying, put them in isolation booths, in plastic boxes, basically, where, they can respond. And if the other person interrupts, you cut the microphone off and you simply keep the camera on the person who's supposed to be talking. That would seem a little odd, I guess, having our presidential candidates in plastic boots. But I suppose that would be one way of doing it. Other people have suggested shock collars like they put on dogs when dogs misbehave. That probably is not a good idea. Other people have said, why are we making concessions like this? Because people can't follow the rules to which they have previously agreed. These are like kids being bullies. I don't actually remember it, but I was reading about the Kennedy-Nixon debates. There was the famous debate that took place here in Chicago. That was the first one. And then they had a series of other debates that took place. One of the other debates featured one candidate in New York and one candidate in Los Angeles. These guys were ahead of their time with, it was basically a Zoom. And what would be so wrong with that? If, you know, one candidate was in one place and one candidate was in another place, you know, they have high technology. It's not like we're going to actually do it on the internet and, you know, an actual Zoom call. But, you know, they could do it and be in different places. And the times that are supposed to be interrupted would be times that are uninterrupted. And, you know, when your time is up, the microphone is cut off, the video is cut off, and then the moderator goes on to the next thing. If they're in different places, that's very easy to control, and seems a lot more beneficial to us, the voters, because as you know, after I watched the debate, after I picked up my jaw off the ground for what I had just watched, I said to myself, zero benefit for the American voter out of this whole debate. We watched this free-for-all go on. And, you know, I was watching to learn more about the two candidates. That's why I watched. I didn't watch to, you know, watch WWE wrestling. So I think, you know, a format like that would make sense to me. How does some of you feel about that? We have a little bit of time. Just to open this up, if you were the one, if you were going to control the debates, if you were going to decide what the format would be, how would you like to see this be done? And please don't be cruel with any of your responses. as much as it's easy to make jokes, as people are doing on social media right now. Seriously, do you even want more debates? I mean, I guess that's another question. That we, you know, should put out there. Number one, should there even be any more debates? Or if there are debates, how do they take place so we can actually hear what the people are saying and hear about their positions rather than hearing the free-for-all that went on? 10:35, Dean Richards Sunday Morning, WGN. Talking the debates, whether or not they should take place. In what format should the debates take place? 312-981-7200 is our telephone number, I guess. On Saturday Night Live last night, I watched the opening of the show that featured Alec Baldwin and Jim Carrey as President Trump and Vice President Biden. Also, last night, Maya Rudolph played Kamala Harris on the show last night. You know, it was an SNL open. It was okay, I guess. Weird Al Yankovic, I thought, did something much funnier, spoofing the debates this week. He did one of, you know, a typical kind of Weird Al Yankovic song, but he did auto harmonizer on the voices of the candidates, making them sound as though they were singing their responses. It's on YouTube. If you put Weird Al debate in the search line, you'll easily be able to find it. That is hilariously funny. But how should it all work if the debates take place? Kevin, hi, you're on WGN. Do you think we should have more debates?
Good morning, Dean. Honestly, I don't think anybody's minds are going to be changed by these debates that we're having the debates coming in the future. I think most people have their minds set already. I think the true division between the country right now isn't so much how they feel about COVID or the Black Lives Matter movement. I think the true divide is Republican and Democrat, and to truly fix our politics nowadays, I don't see how keeping the two parties actually works anymore. I think it just creates more of a divide. I truly think that's what really makes us watch this for the entertainment rather than for the actual information. I'm not a political guy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say you may be 100% right about that, you know, we watch for the same reason that we watch reality television, because we want to see a train wreck happen.
That is 100% how I feel. I think you hit the nail on the head right there, sir.
So how do the candidates convince the so-called undecided voters, which I also, you know, wonder, how can there still be any undecided voters? How can anybody have not made up their mind by now, one way or the other?
With the way social media and the platforms are now, I really don't think there is a way. I don't think there really is any undecided voters, because there's so much information, whether it's good or bad, out there. People are reading into it and just believing it one way or the other. So if you think you're going to change somebody's mind in an hour and a half on TV, I really don't see that happening.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting call, Kevin. Thank you very much for that. And let's go to Sam next, 312-981-7200, WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
I just have a question or a comment. Do you think that the ability or inability to debate well is any indication as to what kind of a president someone would make?
Not necessarily so. I mean, we have had people who were not the greatest orators who were great leaders. And
yeah.
Conversely, we've had people who have been, fantastic orators. You hung on their every word that
yeah.
a lot of people felt were not great leaders. But how else do we learn the positions of the people who want to be president of the United States if we don't listen to them? And some people feel that there is some value in putting the two people on stage. And if it's possible for them to have a discussion of the issues to actually do that, I think there could be some value in a perfect world if the debates actually went the way that we wish debates would go.
Yeah. I kind of agree with your first assessment that I really think it's not much of an indication as to the quality of the politician that they can become. But again, like you said, what other means do we have?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing right now is, are we doing it just because it's been tradition since the Kennedy-Nixon debates?
Right.
Is there still some value in it, or is there a better way to do it? I know in some countries, free television time is offered, so, and a political party can, do whatever they want with the free political time. I don't mean commercials. I mean, like a half an hour or an hour. And you present your points of view in that, and the other person presents their points of view in their block of time that they have. And, that's part of the way. I mean, we are living in a whole new world right now.
It's changed.
It definitely has.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
So if they do have the additional two presidential debates, Sam, same format as before, or should it be some other kind of format?
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to change. Whatever format they decide on, it can't be the same. I really felt like I wasted an hour and a half watching two adult men scream at each other across the stage.
I like the Zoom. I mean, not on a Zoom call, but similar ideas where they're just in two completely different places, and you put them both up on the screen, and you can control the video and the audio. If somebody decides that they're not going to follow the rules that they agreed to in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's got to be something more in that vein, unfortunately.
All right, Sam, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Sure.
Have a great day, and let's get Paul in here at WGN. Good morning.
Morning, Dean.
Hi, Paul.
I think that the debates can serve a purpose, but yes, the format needs to change. I think what was most helpful to me after the debate was looking at the Washington Post or Tribune, some of the fact checkers. So if they could somehow incorporate fact-checking during the debate itself, after each segment, maybe have some group of fact-checkers who say, Mr. Biden, you said this, that's not true, this is the actual fact, and President Trump, you said this, that's not true, this is the actual fact. I think that would be the most helpful kind of format for anybody watching who's still making up their mind.
Yeah, I know that all of the big news networks did that after the debate, where they actually had some time to vet what had been said. Would be interesting to have it going on during the debate, though, and go, during the last segment, you said this, and it turns out that's 100% false. How do you respond to that?
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be wonderful, because then you don't have people turning off and not hearing what the real facts are.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, you're right. Vic, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And a couple of texters this morning said that they would watch the debate, but only if Judge Judy was the moderator. oh, you know, she wouldn't take anything from anybody. Judge somebody on the text line says Judge Judy, but on social media this week I saw a meme floating around that had Samuel L. Jackson as the moderator. That's what we need in the middle of these two guys. And we kind of stay in the same vein of talking about occupants of the White House. There is a new production that is about to begin. We talked about it a little bit last week with Deb Clapp from the League of Chicago Theater. She was talking about this production that the neo-futurists are going to be putting on. For years, they have been putting on inventive, clever, and thought-provoking productions, a little more challenging in the COVID-19 world now, but 45 plays for America's First Lady are their latest project, and Jorge Silva is the managing director of the Neo-Futurist. Jorge, nice to have you with us on the show.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you so much for having me.
So first of all, just congratulations on a long history of the Neo-Futurists putting on fantastic productions. And this one, you know, aside from it being so timely with the election 30 days away, is such an interesting look at the people who live in the White House right now. Tell us about these 45 plays for America's First Ladies.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a show that we had slated to have its live premiere on our stages for this fall, and we were very excited. But obviously, with COVID-19 containment measures, we had to switch gears a bit. And we took all the lessons we took from our home show, The Infinite Wrench Goes Viral, which we also digitally adapted and placed it on this show, because we just felt that the sociopolitical issues that it tackles through the lens of the honorary office of the First Lady was just way too important not to have in this time.
So are these going to be 45 individual productions, or is this sort of a compilation of many First Ladies in one show?
Yes, yeah, so it'll be one big show, something very reminiscent of a lot of our other primetime productions, where we show small segments of biographical pieces, one dedicated to each of the First Ladies throughout history. So we do tackle all 45.
So, for example, can you tell us a little about who is featured and, you know, what is done and, you know, so forth?
Yeah, in classic neo-futurist fashion, we'll be doing it in various ways, from dance to music. We have some music videos involved that tell the story of, say, of Abigail Adams. We have some folks just doing monologues and doing stand-up, in fact. And again, if you're familiar with our show, The Infinite Wrench, you'll see a lot of the same aesthetics being placed on it. So it's one big compilation, and you'll see something for every First Lady. And we actually have a unique opportunity with being digital and what have you, that we've actually included neo-futurists from our sister ensembles from San Francisco and New York as well.
Oh, wow.
So where before, you know, we were highly provincial, we're using ensembles from Chicago, we now get to work with our sisters in San Francisco and New York, and we have an ensemble of six who have worked through and created all of the shows you're going to see.
Very interesting. And all of this will be done virtually. We'll explain how people can tune in to watch it all. But this includes all of the First Ladies, you said, including the current occupant of the White House.
Indeed it does.
Were there some First Ladies that were a little more challenging to do pieces on than others?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of different ways to tackle the history, and I think there was a lot of conversation among the ensemble, among the playwrights, among the director, and us and the company at large to say, like, well, what part of history do we really want to tell? Because we can't invest an entire 45 minutes or hour to each First Lady, which, you know, it can be. You could absolutely do that, but with such short a time, we had to be very selective about what is the history that we really want to tell. And what is it? Why is that so relevant right now?
So I would guess the more prominent First Ladies got the most time and the most attention. Nothing against Millard Fillmore's wife, but, you know, although I would be fascinated to see, a full 3-hour production just on the wife of Millard Fillmore. That's just me.
Yeah. I would say that the what really takes precedence is what's the most important issue, right? Like, I think, obviously, we're going to want to, well, there's certain First Ladies we want to spend the most time on, but I think it's what they actually address that takes up the most time.
Okay, so which ones would you say are the most prominent in the production?
Well, I think off the bat, Abigail Adams has this fantastic music video attached to it, and that's how we tell her story. And that comes out swinging at the top of the show. So that's one of my favorites so far.
Okay, all right. But I have to think that you're dealing with a Nancy Reagan, with a Michelle, mm-hmm. Michelle Obama. I mean, the more contemporary first ladies with which people are likely to be most familiar, right?
Absolutely. Again, we go through every single first lady, and I think that what's the history that we want to tell comes to the forefront of that storytelling.
Okay. So how will people be able to watch this now?
Yeah. So tickets are available through our website currently at neofuturists.org. And what you'll do is you'll get your ticket, and we'll be sending you a specialized link so you can view the show. And we'll have live shows on the 8th, 9th, and the 11th, meaning that you can actually participate in a live version of the show. And then we'll have a static version of the show for sale afterward for those who can't make those dates.
Okay, so the show will be performed live then, October 8th, 9th, and 11th. And then if somebody wants to get the link and watch it at a time other than that, they will also be able to do that.
Correct.
When you say that people can participate in it, what do you mean?
So I don't want to give away too much about what you can do, but there is audience interaction because that's so important to neo-futurist shows. So if you're watching it, there'll be an opportunity for folks to actually join in on the live portion of the shows in some way, shape, or form.
Okay. I mean, that's as close to the actual theatrical experience as you can get, I guess, these days, right?
Absolutely. Again, we like to say that we like to take risks, but we keep those risks on the stage, so we're happy to keep it virtual.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so neofuturist.org, October 8th, 9th, and 11th for the live versions. And we'll repeat that in a few minutes if you're not near something to write that all down. What has this pandemic meant to neofuturists, Jorge? And, you know, the theater community at large, we've been talking about this since the shutdown began, and how difficult it is not only for the actors but for crew and for caterers and people. There are so many other people who are involved in a theater not being able to operate in its normal fashion. What has it meant for all of you?
It is a time-honored tradition of us to be ongoing and ever-changing, and so it comes as a real challenge for us to have to shutter our doors at any point in time. And this specifically was a very difficult time for us to have to stop our 50-week-a-year production of The Infinite Wrench. But what it meant was we took that as an opportunity as well, because constraint is a part of our creative process. And so, again, we don't want to risk the health and safety of any of our audiences, our ensemble, our staff, and we were excited to a certain extent to be able to try to transition and make a digital version of our show and try to make something anew and keep the tradition going. We miss our audiences, obviously. We want to be able to have that feedback, that interaction. It's so important, again, to the neo-futurist process. But again, we want to be safe. And we're looking forward to the day that we can come back and be with our audiences again, but we're going to be holding on to the digital work for as long as possible.
Yeah, I've been saying, throughout this, that imagine that first show back with an actual audience, when things when things are safe, when everything is okay, not only on the neo-futurist stage, but on Broadway, in downtown Chicago, in movie theaters. Imagine that first time when it's completely safe and there can be live performances again, concerts, whatever it is. It's going to be fireworks, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think it'll be huge relief. I think it'll be a lot of excitement. We're a community as well. I know that the one thing that's always been really exciting about doing live performances is that people will go into the chat and talk to each other and feel excited and feel like they're at an event again. And that in and of itself brings a lot of catharsis to people. And we want to try to provide that. And then I imagine when we come back, we'll see the exact same thing. People just really excited to be a part of the community again.
Yeah. And has this sparked, sort of a, a new wave of creativity? People in theater, music, artists, you know, when met with a challenge like a pandemic shutdown, find new ways to express their art, express their messages. Maybe it's been positive in a way.
I mean, in a way, obviously, like, you know, it's unfortunate that these are the circumstances. Clearly, like, it's been ever present in the work. And but again, we know that having to create in this fashion has been an exciting challenge on its own. And we know that some of the work is very relieving to folks who are looking for something to actually reflect what they're experiencing, because so much of the work is coming from ensemble members and their own lives. So I don't know if we would ever have gone and done this amount of video work, without having to be forced into containment, but I'm glad that we are, and I think it's something that'll stick around even when we have a live show again.
Yeah, so with your production, are people working out of their individual homes and putting this together for 45 plays for America's First Ladies?
Yeah, so again, if you see the show, you'll see that the vast majority of it is being done with folks in their own homes, DIY in the, you know, with their own phones or whatever, you know, equipment they have at hand. And, you know, the good thing is that our audiences are very forgiving in that we've always been known for being DIY. So, which is kind of inspiring on its own for audience members who are thinking about doing the same thing. It's like, if I wanted to create something, I could, because they're using the exact same material that I have already on hand.
And so, though
you will see also that the Chicagoans will get together in a socially distant and safe fashion to do a shoot together. Same thing with the San Franciscans and the New Yorkers.
How many years now has Neo Futurist been going strong? It's got to be one of the longest running theater companies in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, we're about to reach our 32-year anniversary.
Wow.
And we've been doing the late night show for those 32 years, and we continue to do it with The Infinite Wrench Goes Viral. Continue to make a show every week.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I know I've been driving by your theater, you know, at you know, kind of late in the evening, usually, you know, wrapping things up from a dinner or something like that. And I drive by and I see the long line of people waiting to get in. It's like, God bless those neo-futurists. They are still making, you know, people are still waiting in line to get into their theater to see their shows. And I hope this new digital effort is just as successful. 45 plays for America's First Ladies. It'll be October 8th, 9th, and 11th. You can go to neofuturists.org to get more information, to get the link to watch the shows live or to watch them subsequently later on. Is all that correct? Did I get that right?
You got it all right. Thank you so much, Dean.
It's good to talk to you, Jorge. Jorge Silva, Managing Director of the Neo Futurist. Appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, a little bit of an abbreviated show here today. Got Browns and Cowboys football coming up starting at 11:30. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, though, I will be talking with Laura Dern, actress Laura Dern. She's the producer of a new movie called The Way I See It, which is a very interesting look at the official White House photographer for both President Reagan and President Obama. Talk about somebody, you know, two people who are quintessentially Republican, quintessentially Democrat. Pete Souza is this amazing photographer's name. There's a brand new movie about his life and career. Laura Dern produced the movie. We'll talk with both Pete and Laura Dern all tomorrow morning on WGN-TV Morning News, but also tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, you will see for the first time on the Big Number 9, Ray Cortopassi, who will become the new co-anchor of the WGN Evening News at 5 and 6, the WGN News at 9 and 10, alongside Micah Mater. And it's a pleasure to have Ray joining us this morning here on WGN Radio. Hello there, my friend, and welcome. Nice to have you with us. Welcome back home to you, because you are truly one of Chicago's very own as well.
What a journey it has been, Dean. And can I say what a thrill it is to be on your show? This is not the first time I've been on WGN Radio. I remember back in the day, I used to listen to Roy Leonard, and I would call in on his show and chat with him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of a full circle moment for me. And to hear you describe my joining the team, I was pretty sure it was real before you said it, but when you shared it live on the air, boy, that was kind of a nice moment for me. So thanks for giving me that.
I can 1,000% relate to how you must be feeling. When I got hired at WGN television first, actually, before WGN radio, and I was walking down that long hallway back, you know, to the newsroom, I stopped for a moment because when I was in fourth grade, I went to Edward Cole School on the South Side, South Shore neighborhood, and we went on a field trip all the way to the North Side. It seemed like a weekend trip we were going on, one of those brown buses, all the way to the North Side, the 2501 West Bradley Place, to attend the Bozo Show. And I, as I was walking in my first day working at WGN, standing in that hall, just imagining, little 10-year-old Dean stood right there in line waiting to see Bozo. And now here I'm working here. Someone has made a terrible mistake. Something terrible.
Well, Dean, did you have designs on a career? Were you one of those young men and women who knew from the time that they were out of the cradle that they were destined for a life in television, or was that dream born for you walking down that long hallway?
Well, it was, you know, my mom always told the story of how when I was a little kid, I would be, while everybody else was outside playing baseball, I would be down in the basement playing radio DJ. So, you know, I had the bug somehow early on. But here's what I love. In Ray's bio, he talks about growing up in Dalton. Went to Columbia College, got a journalism degree. That's also where I got my degree, by the way, Columbia College. Ray's parents grew up in Roseland. His dad worked at U.S. Steel Southworks. Mom was a piano teacher, worked from the home in Dalton. Here's the part of your bio that I love the most. Ray woke up to Ray Rayner and ate lunch watching Bozo Circus. This is when I knew I was going to be friends with Ray Cortopassi.
And it was by no means a unique situation. I think every kid in my neighborhood was the same way. When we were little, we woke up watching Ray Rayner and Garfield Goose, for that matter.
Yeah.
And what a spectacular start that was for anybody who enjoyed being entertained and wanted to feel connected to Chicagoland, because I was a sheltered Southsider who didn't really see much of downtown until I was a little bit older.
Same.
And then later the North Side, but it was just a spectacular start. I'll never forget watching Ray Rayner and watching the Bugs Bunny cartoons, and then Ray would come on and have Cuddly Dudley and Chauncey the Duck, and my older brother Mike would get ready to go off to school, and my little brother and I would sit on that couch watching the show, and it was sort of forever ingrained in my mind, and WGN has always loomed large like that, and it's just doesn't seem possible that I get to actually be a part of that auspicious team that means so much to so many, and I can't wait for tomorrow to get here and we start running.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, you know, one of the things, like you being born and raised in Chicago, WGN means more to me than just a place where I work. I mean, it's part of my life. It's part of my childhood, you know, part of everything. So to be able to be part of this team and, you know, in a much a sillier way at times on the WGN TV morning news, we have fun, to be able to be one of the main co-anchors, I can just imagine what a mind trip that is for you.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, aside from, you know, growing up with Bozo and all that, and, you know, if that doesn't give you credentials to do the news, I don't know what does. you have been part of the number one news in Indianapolis for quite some time, right?
Yes, I started my career at the same broadcasting umbrella as WGN, the same ownership group, and I have been blessed to be, you know, doing this for a number of years, primarily as a reporter and then later an anchor, both in the evening setting and then later at the Fox station where I've been broadcasting for the last 11 years.
that was a sort of a new framework for me, working on a morning newscast, which, as you know, to an even greater degree, there is such an element of news presentation. There is, you know, getting folks ready for the day with a team that you have come to know over a long period of time, where you have a chance to share your personality and do things that are, you know, sort of off the wall and entertaining. And I think that helped prepare me to see the world in a whole different light, and to be able to bring a little bit of that to this next chapter in my life. I don't know that we'll get to do the same crazy, goofy things that you guys do in the morning, but certainly there are trace elements that carry us through. And I feel already an extraordinary level of comfort with Micah and, of course, Tom and Dan. And they have been so welcoming, because I got to come in and do a promo shoot a few weeks ago and get to meet the whole team face to face. And what a thrill that was for me. And it gave me a glimpse of what my professional and personal life would be like moving forward. And it gave me such a feeling of peace and comfort. You know, when you're stepping into a role that is so, so important and so critical, to be able to have still that comfortable family atmosphere was really at once calming for me. So I go in tomorrow with so much enthusiasm and excitement, but also a sense of calm. It's sort of a strange place to be in, I guess, when you describe it from the outside. But that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. Yet, it's a most extraordinary time with COVID-19 going on and social distancing going on, and the way that we're reporting news now, the way that we handle everything. I'm sure you made similar adjustments in Indianapolis earlier this year. We're kind of redefining every single day, aren't we?
It is such a critical time for all those reasons you just described. I can recall being vaulted to an evening position where you're sort of a part of a team that is bringing the news of record of the day. And I began that right before September 11th. And so when that moment sort of shook us to our core, I was already in that anchor chair having to make sense of what was going on moment by moment. And I sort of feel like we're not quite at that point, but it certainly shares some similarities. You know, we have a president whose health is certainly in question right now. Much of our country is divided, whether it's in the political realm or social inequality. And so many people are turning to WGN to sort of help make sense of that all. And so I feel this awesome sense of responsibility. And I'm just so relieved that I have such a great team of people that you watch every day, but also we have such a deep level of talent in our newsroom, whether it's our reporting staff or producers or news writers who already know the dynamics of the city, and they understand what it is that, you know, our friends, our viewers really want to know, and they are able to put it in context. So I'm really grateful that I've got such a team to be able to lean into as I make my way through this familiar place.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in that newsroom a lot over the years because it has been sort of within my strike zone. I've wanted to be able to be a part of this team going back many, many years. So I established a relationship early on in my career as a broadcaster, hoping that one day I would be able to be a part of this. And so here we are at that moment. It's all coalescing at such an important time. And I'm grateful, and I'm thankful that we do it in a sense of togetherness, not only with our team, but everybody who is part of the extended WGN family.
Yeah, no pressure on you at all coming in at such a slow news week.
Boy, I was watching the broadcast at 4 o'clock with Ben and Gaynor doing really a masterful job at walking us through moment by moment what was happening when the president was being airlifted to Walter Reed. And, you know, to know that so many people get their news from us is really an awesome responsibility.
Oh, 11:22, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN with Ray Cortopassi, the new evening news anchor, alongside Micah Matera on WGN-TV. This is just for you, Ray, Hard Rock, Coco, and Joe. The Christmas classic, if you grew up on WGN and Ray Rayner and Bozo and Garfield Goose. This certainly was a part of our Christmas heritage here in Chicago, that's for sure.
Oh, gosh. You know, I, for the last 11 years, have worked as a broadcaster in Indianapolis, and I've really been blessed to have a great friendship with our evening meteorologist, who at the time is also from Chicago. And guess what? He interned with Tom Skilling for several years, and we would, you know, during our own commercial breaks, would sing the commercial jingles. He would often sing that one from that great TV show. But I can't tell you how many times I would just look over at him, and he'd have that look in his eyes, and out would come, "Rock goodbye, your baby."
Oh,
hi, Harry Schmerling, your singing Ford dealer.
Wow. Yeah, so you just earned so much credibility with that reference right there. Harry Schmerling, the singing Ford man.
Wow. Well, it's hard to forget Harry.
Yeah, that's for sure. So
one of two Harrys.
I know you're going to be on tomorrow morning with Bob Surratt, that'll be interesting. I think, are you on at 8:30 tomorrow morning?
I think it's at 8:20, yeah. So right in that time frame.
Okay, well, I may be on with you then, because that's when I do my segment with Bob.
I hope so. I'm going to lean on you to help walk me through that.
Right.
I mean, you guys are...
Right.
You know, you've got a great team, and I'm not quite sure what to expect tomorrow.
Here's the thing.
I know my predecessor was a break dancer and did a little of that on the morning show a couple years ago.
Oh, on the TV morning show, yeah. Yes. See, that's the thing that I'm scared about, because you'll be on with Paul Conrad and, you know, the whole gang from TV. And, you know, I cannot be responsible for what may happen during that.
Well, you and I have a relationship now, Dean, and I'm going to look to you to help, you know, be that arm around me as I walk through the unknown there.
Yeah, Southside brothers for sure. And
please.
Also, I'll give you some good, you know, before you go on, I'll give you some good blackmail on everybody, so you know, so they handle you with kid gloves. If they think
leverage is good.
Yeah, if they think that you've got some incriminating stories on them before you start. It can never hurt, you know, that's for sure.
I'll take it.
So on the serious side, Ray, what kinds of news stories do you like to cover? What are the kinds of things? You know, some people like doing investigative, some people like doing human interest stories. Everyone's got, you know, something which really touches their heart in some way or really drives them. What would you say?
You know, in 25 years, Dean, it's the storytelling that I've been lucky enough to do. It really involves the full gamut, whether it has been investigative reporting, as long as there is someone who is at the heart of that story, that is someone that you can relate to in some way, someone that you can feel the struggle that they may be going through, because oftentimes that's what it involves, some sort of conflict, and hopefully through the course of our storytelling, you'll see a resolution. And so my focus is always on the person who is at the heart of that story. And I think I am most gratified when I'm telling stories of people who face some extraordinary challenge. And it is not something that, you know, is something you would necessarily see up on Hollywood shooting a big movie production. But a couple of stories that really resonated for me involved just a number of months ago. There's a high school tennis coach who I had known peripherally. One day, suddenly, he suffered a detached retina. And it was a new affliction for him. And so over the course of time, he suffered, I think, 11 retinal detachments and was gradually losing his eyesight. And this is a young man with a father. He's a father of three young children. And for him to walk through that life-changing crisis was at once a story of inspiration and loss, but also hope, because he somehow found a way to regain his own sense of identity through that difficulty, And here he is now back on the tennis court with, you know, with a vision that's relegated to just one eye. And it is such a specific problem that he had to overcome. And if you look at the history of storytelling, a lot of those stories sort of came my way because I feel something when I hear stories like that, and I wanted to be able to share them with my audience. So I don't know how you would describe that sort of storytelling, but I guess that would fall in line with, you know, feature reporting and sharing the human condition.
Well, I mean, you know, those kind of stories, no matter what adversity one is facing, when they see stories like that, gives them a little bit of hope that I, whatever I'm going through, maybe I can get through whatever seems insurmountable to me at the moment also. So I mean, I find stories like that, you know, tremendously inspiring because everybody faces some kind of difficulty at one time or another.
So much of the time, you would hope that there is a happy ending. And when we pick up a story, there may not be an immediate happy ending. And so it's something that you have to follow through its course. And it is a great honor to be able to have people let me into their lives to share those very personal and very vulnerable stories. And, you know, we all have those. And that is something that is really worthwhile and gives me a great sense of gratification.
Well, we're looking forward to having you join us tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. I apologize in advance for anything that may occur during your visit with our show.
I guess I will say apology accepted in advance.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can make that work, but I'm looking forward to it. I have been watching the morning hijinks. I cannot believe some of the things that you guys get away with doing, but somehow you walk that line. You deliver the news, you deliver entertainment, and it is, you make it look so easy, but having been a part of it for so many years, I know it ain't easy. It is anything but, and somehow you all do it with grace and humility and charm and humor that I've been blown away every time I tune in.
And we're looking forward to seeing you tomorrow and weeknights 5, 6, 9, and 10. Ray Cortopassi, we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for joining us, my friend. Appreciate it.